Shoot, they score!
Score!
We have Crosby.
Hit the shot, he scores!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
More of a personnel issue or more of a
he's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to an abbreviated edition of NHL This Week for the Thursday, the 3rd of December, 2015. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Opening segment of this week's show brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom made mouth guard is a must have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Toronto Maple Leafs could have used a little bit more protection yesterday as the Winnipeg Jets on home ice for the first time, well, not in a while, but the first time, you know, it's the start of December where there's more home games, got the month off to a good start with a 6-1 dismantling of the Toronto Maple Leafs last night at MTS Center. The victory that the Jets needed, taking a bad opponent and a team that you are worse than, pardon me, that is worse than you, and imposing your will on them after 20 minutes, sure, it was close, but then the third period, the Jets came out and absolutely dominated the by scoring 4 third period goals and taking the 6-1 victory.
Yeah, and it was a big victory, guys, for the Jets, not only for those reasons, Drew, but because you had the time off and because you were in a situation where you knew that you had a couple of hard games coming up back-to-back against the Capitals and the Blackhawks on Saturday and Sunday. And with the Winnipeg Jets and the unfortunate record they had in November and the way they played, even though a couple of games could have gone the other way, I would say, and really I don't think they played necessarily as bad as their record was in November.
You sure about that?
They played a really well. it's certainly up for debate, right, Richie? But that game was I thought a really smart game for the Jets, and that game could have easily been worse than 6-1. I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs really looked bad in their own zone, especially. But the Jets after the I thought it was really, you know, in addition to the way Connor Hellebuyck played, I thought it was, you know, really indicative of the way the Jets played. After the first period, they took a few penalties, but after that, stayed out of the penalty box. That game was really decided at 5-on-5. I know that Drew Stafford got a power play goal, the Jets' second goal, but really I thought that that game was dominated by the Jets at 5-on-5, and with the exception of a few chances, you know, Sean Mathias breakaway and a few chances here and there and the disallowed goal, obviously, Richie, the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't pose much of a threat. And that's not to take anything away from Connor Hellebuyck because he played very well and he was tested more than he was in his NHL debut. But needless to say, this Leafs team, as you mentioned, Drew, was a team that they needed to beat. And I think it would have been a huge letdown if after you had all that time off between your last game against Colorado, you didn't come out with a really solid victory, and they did. And they saw a weak opponent and they crushed them, and that's important, and hopefully it leads to more victories here on the weekend, because as we know, these are two top teams. I realize the Chicago Blackhawks are maybe struggling a little bit, but it's back-to-back situation, and you know it's going to be tough. Two afternoon games, two really good teams, two teams that could easily be in the Stanley Cup final, Richie, by the way. I know you really like the Capitals, so you hope that it leads to more wins here, because the Jets can't just be happy with one win. Because of the November they had, they need more. They need to go on a nice run of 4 or 5 wins in a row here.
Yeah, and you have to beat bad teams, and the Toronto Maple Leafs are a bad team.
It's something the Jets haven't been doing, by losing those two games against Colorado.
Yeah, and I thought the Jets played well combined with a bad Leafs team playing poorly, and that's why you have to see the 6-1 score. But a lot of good things that the Jets did yesterday. I thought they played with good speed through the neutral zone. That's important to their game. Transition was pretty good out of their own zone. And they really controlled the play, I thought, even though, you know, the shots were, I thought, a tad deceiving. But overall, it was a good performance by the Jets. You know, Hellebuyck played solid game. I thought he looked very calm in the net. Was he challenged a ton? No. And we'll see more when he does get challenged more. But you have to like what you did see of him. He made a real nice blocker save, actually, at the end of the game when most people left.
Yeah.
A nice quick blocker save there. But he showed good poise. Overall, though, the Leafs are bad. And the Leafs rely heavily, in my opinion, if they're going to be a competitive team on a night-in-night-out basis, they need to rely on their defense, which I think has a lot of talent, to perform well. And I thought last night was an example of them relying on that defense, the defense letting them down.
Sure.
Fanouf was terrible. Mm-hmm. Morgan Riley, I thought, had one of his poorer games, and I really like his game. Jake Gardner got beat on that sixth goal. So there was a lot of examples. Matt Hunwick's even, he made some turnovers. His play was a bit erratic. So overall, you know, that Leafs team that I think relies on that puck moving back end struggle. But give the Jets credit when you get in on the forecheck, when you're able to control the puck. And, you know, Tyler Myers, solid, you know, quiet, solid game like that. Mm-hmm. Those are good things. So overall, a good performance by Winnipeg. Now, how do you take that to the next game? And by that, I mean the Toronto Maple Leafs, partially to the Jets' credit and partially to the fact that the Leafs have a terrible forward group, just terrible forward group that doesn't really go to the net. How do you defend against a Washington team that isn't terrible, will control the puck in your own zone, in your zone, and will go to the net? And the thing about the Capitals that I like so much is that they have a variety of skill sets. Grinding players, skill players, mix of both, speed, size. They can do all those things. So how do you defend against a team like that? You have to put your, you know, the Jets played well yesterday, but their game has to go up a level to play against a team like Washington. I know Washington plays tonight, and then you're playing, you know, in another game, and we always hear all these excuses on 36 hours, whatever it is. You just have to make sure you get back to the basics of defending in your own zone.
Well,
it's hard to tell from yesterday whether, you know, that's a good start, but that's not the team you're going to get started against.
No, I mean, exactly. You can't really take much in terms of, you know, in terms of how it's going to lead into the next game based on that game. Plus, that's been a problem for the Jets. Every time you think they're turning a corner, say against Minnesota last Friday, they take a step back the next night against Colorado. So, you know, it's that's what I think it will be interesting. It's like, okay, you beat up a weak opponent, which the Jets, I mean, really haven't beat up a weak opponent like that all season. Every other game that they've, you know, they haven't beat a team like that 6-1, I mean, in a long while. Because teams don't get beat like that in the NHL very often. Yeah. So the Jets have the good feelings from that victory, but how do you translate, like you said, Richie, how do you take that game and the good feelings from that and continue it against the Washington Capitals, a team that even if you play pretty much your best, if you play exactly how you want to play, you could still very well lose that game because Washington is more talented than you are. So it's a difficult conundrum for the Jets players and head coach Paul Maurice.
And Drew, it's easier said than done, isn't it, right? Because when you get in a situation when you're at home against the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom are coming over the ice, coming over the boards onto the ice, and then you have to deal with a pretty darn good second line as well with Evgeny Kuznetsov, Justin Williams. I mean, this is a really deep team. Rich just mentioned it. And they're strong on defense. They have guys like John Carlson that like to jump up into play, Matt Niskanen. There's no shortage of offensive production from the back end for the Washington Capitals. Plus, you have to deal with one of the best goalies in the game right now. Braden Holtby, over the last couple of years, has emerged as one of the best goalies in the game, and he'll probably factor in to Team Canada at the World Cup and the Olympics in the years going forward, right?
Absolutely.
So it's going to be a tough challenge with Chicago coming on the second game of a back-to-back, but the Jets have done this. I mean, we looked at the record in November and the record in previous years in December. Last year, they went 7-3-3 in the month of December. I tweeted this out a couple of days ago. To me, that was really the turning point in the season. Sure, you could probably pick it and choose three or four turning points in the season, but that was a time of the season when the Jets started to have a lot of injuries, and they went on a really nice run, went on a couple of three or four game winning streaks in early December through middle of January, right? And there was the Chicago away victories in there as well. So this is a time of the year where you definitely want to be picking up points. You got Chicago twice on the road.
Twice in the span of about, what, 5 days or so?
Exactly.
And Sunday and then the following Friday, on a back-to-back.
And the good news is the Jets have done really well against Chicago over the last little while. So you're probably going to see Connor Hellebuyck on Saturday, and I mean, I heard the big show today. The debate is now if Connor Hellebuyck shuts out the Washington Capitals, do you put him back in against Chicago? I mean, it's a serious question, right, Drew?
Why don't we worry about the game first?
Yeah, how about they beat the Capitals 4-3 or something like that? Let's not get a little bit carried away. The answer, by the way, to that question to me is no. You can't go. I wouldn't go back to back at that point in time. But you know. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves there and worry about the Saturday afternoon game against the Washington Capitals. First and foremost, the team that has had great success against you in this building.
Yeah, they've played well against the Jets in the building, Drew. But quickly on Ezzie's point about the good record last year, 7-3-3, totally understood.
Mm-hmm.
Jets basically have to play at that clip the rest of the season. So
that's what happens when you have a November as bad as you had. You know, it's one thing if you have a middling November where you're still losing games, but you're getting some points in the shootout or points in the overtime. You're getting a point. You don't have any of the prolonged six-game losing streaks. When you have losing streaks of that nature where you don't earn any of the bonus points or the loser points, you have to, like you said, Richie, you have to play at a clip of about 700, 675 for the remainder of the season.
You know, 99 points, that's what we're looking at here? I mean, you think that's enough? It should be around there.
Well, I mean, look, if you get 99 points and it's not enough, what can you do? You throw your hands up in the air and you say, we gave it all we can, and the gods conspired against us at that point.
And Drew, whether it's 98, 99, 100, 101, the point is the Jets aren't looking at that number, and they don't have that number up in the dressing room. The point is they know that they have to go on some winning streaks. The number itself is fairly arbitrary. They know it's going to be very hard. They know they're going to be battling at least two teams, most likely three or four teams, Chicago, Nashville, Minnesota, teams in their own division. Mm-hmm. It's not going to get any easier, and that's why you got to beat a team like Chicago and throw in Washington as well, but especially Chicago. You really got to set the tone here for the rest of the month because, as you mentioned, November was a really tough month. One of the most difficult stretches for this team, I think, since Claude Noel's last year.
Yeah, and
they
true.
Can do it.
It's
I mean, they can go on a run here. They can beat Chicago and Washington back-to-back. I mean, it's possible.
Well,
the
anything
way
can happen.
Well, yeah, but just based on the way they've played, because even against Colorado, they lost that game. But, I mean, a couple of lucky bounces, and Colorado's
terrible.
Well,
the Leafs are awful.
Yeah.
I mean, the Minnesota Wild, I agree with you, building on that game, of course. But you can't. I mean,
it was more so that Minnesota game that I think they could really build off of, and the Toronto game, because
you could build up the Toronto game. I agree,
right? Because if the Jets would have beat Toronto 2-1, Drew,
sure,
we'd be sitting here talking about how the Jets should have beat them 6-1.
Well,
right,
that's right, absolutely. You're absolutely
which
right.
You can say, I mean, which you saw similarly when they beat Vancouver and they beat Arizona in two not very impressive performances.
It was a better game.
This was a better game. You imposed your will on a team that is worse than you,
but,
and you, I mean, frankly, you embarrassed them on home ice, and that's good.
You got to go, if you want to get 99 points, 98, 99, you got to win 34 games. 34-5, 34-17-5, around there.
To get to what?
To get to 98, 99 points.
No, more than, you mean of your remaining games,
yeah,
you're saying.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my point is this. There's no more splits are good, meaning there's no more win one, beat one of Washington, Chicago, feel good about yourself. I mean, if you want to feel good about yourself, go ahead and play rec hockey. But at some point, you got to win multiple games in a row against quality teams,
sure,
to be able to give yourself a realistic shot to make the playoffs, especially intra-division games like Chicago on Sunday. Forget the travel. Forget all that stuff. No excuses.
Well, you're going to be in Chicago by what? 9 o'clock at night?
I just don't have any time for the excuses.
I mean, and when you lose to the Colorado
Avalanche... I'm not saying they're putting the excuses out there, but you got to put together wins.
When you lose to the Colorado Avalanche twice, and when the season started, at the beginning of the year, you look at the schedule and you say, okay, I play Colorado twice there. Those are two victories.
Well, before the season started, I don't think that was the case.
But at some point
I picked
in time,
them to be a playoff team.
Fine, but some point...
I also picked Todd Richards to be coach of the year.
Exactly. Some point early on in the season when you see what Colorado is,
right,
you circle those as wins. So every time you lose a game that you've circled as a win means you have to make it up somewhere. And that making it up somewhere is... winning in Chicago on a back-to-back, yep, beating Washington at home, winning in Chicago, you play them twice in the span of 5 days on back-to-backs. You take both of those victories or something, and you win against Washington and you win against Columbus at home. Well, now you're talking. You've made up the ground you've lost to some extent by losing to Colorado when you win games you don't expect to win.
I'll tell you this much, guys. when they went into the Verizon Center in Washington, they're going to have to play with a lot more structure than they did. Because
especially in that first period.
This Washington team, and again, got to give Richie credit because he's been predicting them to do great things, meaning winning the Stanley Cup for the last couple of years here. And this team, I know the Rangers and the Habs are ahead of them in the standings, but I still think this is the most complete team in the NHL right now, and they have many different players that can beat you in many different ways, so they're going to have to be more structured defensively. And the good news is they were good defensively against Minnesota. They were pretty good defensively last night against the Toronto Maple Leafs, only gave up one goal. If they play similarly to that, then they should be good, and they should get 2 points against the Caps, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Before we head to break, this segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. When we come back on the other side, more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. You can also send us a tweet at Illegal Curve. We'll give you more information. Want you to join Team Illegal Curve in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Al, producer Al, he's a member of the Team Illegal Curve. So
love
are you
it.
Guys.
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to have a nice big dual bike, tandem bike for you guys to ride. It'll be fun. Anyways, last night, guys, was that a goal in your mind? The Maple Leafs' second goal, which was initially ruled a goal on the ice and then disallowed via video review. What do you think? Is that a goal in your mind?
Yeah, that was a goal.
Has that
Jets got a break there.
Has that been a goal for the last, say, 70 years in the NHL?
A couple things on that, Drew. I think the first thing is, you know, if you look at it, Tyler Myers kind of edges Winnick into the crease kind of twice, really. And you know, it's actually Brian Little's guy that Spalling, who gets to the loose puck there. But overall,
by the way, that was the definition of a garbage goal. If that goal would have been allowed, that would have been the worst goal.
But I mean, that's a garbage goal, Izzy. I agree with you. But I mean, it should have been allowed. Let's look at it. I mean, first of all, if it takes that long to do a review and you have two referees on the ice, it probably was whatever calls on the ice stands. Because how long, you know, if it's clearly not a goal, if there's clearly interference, you look at it once, twice, three times. Okay, I see it. There you go. If you look at it 20 times and try and interpret the speed of the guy pushing the other guy possibly in the crease at that time, I mean, we don't want to get back to 97, 98 where a foot in the crease means a disallowed goal.
Well, it ruins the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, and I just, like, that call's overturned. If you reverse it and the Jets score that goal last night and they're down 4-1 against a good team, they're down 4-1, the Jets score that goal last night, and it's a 4-2 goal to get back in the game. The Leafs wouldn't have won anyways. The crowd would have gone insane. And rightfully so if that had happened. Because that call, I mean, is there a little gray area? Sure. But you have to give, this is the problem with this replay rule, is, I mean, there's almost too much discretion to the guys above as opposed to the guys on the ice for a play like that. I mean, that's not a play like, is it high stick or not? And you're looking...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a feel on the ice, too, of the situation and all that. I just thought that was a poor call. I know Carey Fraser on TSN said the same, but I thought so last night. I'm certainly not going to change my tune on that. And I want to see goals. Believe me, in a league where nobody scores any goals, you probably want to allow those goals.
Well, especially because, sorry, as I'll let you get in here, but like, you know, when you know, you're coaching and coaches say what? Get pucks on the net. Go to the dirty
areas.
True. this is something the Leafs, who really are lacking in offensive talent.
Well, they also lack in guys who want to go to the front of the net.
Absolutely. But this is this is an instance where some of their, you know, their grinders.
Parento, Brad Boyes.
Yeah. These guys went to the front of the net. They dug the puck out. They did all the dirty things. I mean, Mike Babcock, at the end of the game, has to be looking at that on video and saying, this is what we want. This is how we have to.
I don't think he's watching the video.
Okay. I know. You know what I'm saying. That this is how we have to score.
Yeah.
We don't have enough guys who are willing to score like
fair.
This.
That's fair.
And then the NHL decides, no, you know, maybe interpreting, we pushed him in a little bit too much and wouldn't let him out as easily.
I mean, did he impede his ability to play the puck? Okay, I understand their thought process behind it. I just disagree with it completely. I know. If a guy comes in, pushes a goalie, I understand it. I was watching a game the other night. It was Pittsburgh-Columbus. I don't know if you guys saw that. And I forget, it was Hartnell put a stick on the goaltender, on Fleury, and then Fleury kind of a slash hook a little bit. Fleury gets over and doesn't make the play on the goal, I think by Ryan Johansson, whoever it was. But the point is, they reviewed that and they still allowed it. I mean, that was direct contact before the play and they still allowed it. So that's why I don't know, where's the consistency here?
Right, and the point that you made, Rich, that resonates the most with me is that how many times have you seen a mad scramble like that? Oh. And that was the definition of a mad scramble. Everyone just pitchforking Hellebuck's pads and slapping the puck and hoping that the puck goes in somehow. Yeah. You didn't even really see what was going on because it was just a bunch of guys trying to move the puck or put the puck in the net, right? How many times have you seen that goal allowed? And the answer is a lot. And I think for
always.
Me, it's the precedent. Are we going to start to see any minimal contact with the goaltender? Is that going to be enough to overturn the goal? Now, for Jets fans, that was great. And for the Jets, obviously, that was great because the goal didn't count. The goal was a meaningless goal.
Yeah,
I mean, the Jets had that game locked up and all that. But it's still a goal is still a goal, right? Who knows? Maybe if that goal is counted, maybe the Leafs get another one and maybe they make it interesting. But I agree
maybe
with
not.
I agree with Rich, though, too. You know, that goal probably should have counted.
Well, what I hate
but
is... Sorry.
Based on the way they're trying to call it now, and I agree, I you know, the coach's challenge, it's not going as smoothly, yeah. I think, maybe as the NHL and the NHLPA thought it was going to be going, because I think you're starting to see, as Rich mentioned, this is a completely gray area. This is 100% subjective. You get 10 people in the room looking at that, they say, ah, you know what, he was just in there. And I mean, once the play is live, Drew, and once
you're
going in for
that,
the puck,
MC.
Right.
You are right about that because, you know, a goal over the line, a ball on the line in football for a touchdown, a ball out of a hand before a shot in basketball. I mean, you're not reviewing the foul. Here you're reviewing the foul.
I feel like, Richie, goaltender interference is going the way of pass interference in the NFL.
Calling everything? Yeah, that's a fair analogy.
And
I like
that
analogy.
I think in the NFL right now, does anybody know what pass interference is anymore?
That's a fair
nobody
point.
Knows what pass interference is. Nobody knows what a catch is.
That's
so
a really,
the same thing.
That's a really
if
good point.
If you impede the goalie's ability to stop the puck, that's goalie interference. To me, it's pretty obvious. But then you get in the situation, like Richie just mentioned, well, if the guy gets splashed a little bit before the shot comes, you know, is that goalie interference? If the guy, if the puck is there and the guy follows it in and then he impedes Hellebuck's ability to stop it, is that goalie interference?
Let me ask you. That's a fair question. Like, if a guy's in front of the net, if I'm in front of the net and you cross-check me, and I feel you cross-check me.
I would never
me,
cross-check you, Richie.
Oh, yeah. And I feel you cross-check me, and I kind of go into the goaltender.
Yeah.
There's a field play there. There's a reputation play. There's a bunch of different things that are at play, pardon the pun there, right? So what you want to look at is the refs know the players best. Believe me, you know, they follow all these games. They know who's who. So if I'm Brad Marchand and Ezzie hits me, cross-checks me into the goalie.
If you're Brad Marchand, you have a target on your back.
Right, yeah. That's why you hit me.
And no, if you dive into the goalie, you have
then,
a reputation for doing
that. And the guy on the ice is going to have a feel for that. Maybe Marchand has a reputation, but he really did get hit hard.
Yeah.
He sees it in real time.
Brendan Gallagher, similar idea.
And he makes a judgment call. And then you go back up, and then you're kind of taking that element out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is more so for the ones that the ref didn't see at all, like the hook of the skate before the goalie went to that kind of thing. I mean, the contact play like this, or I mean, if you're the ref, one ref is right on top of the net looking to see if it went in. Now he might be puck focused, but that's why you have the back ref, and he has an idea of what's going on. Now, sure, he's far away, but I just think.
Let me put it to you this way: I agree with you what you're saying, and if the officials thought that what was happening on the ice was so detrimental to the play. If they thought it was goaltender interference,
we called it before.
Why don't you whistle it? You can whistle it dead and say, you know, like you do in rec hockey. There's a guy in the crease and he's making contact, so we're going to whistle the play dead and move it out of the zone. Why do they let it play it out and then they go back and review it if they thought it was so reprehensible to start.
So you're saying put the power upstairs?
No, I'm saying put the power with the, get rid of the video review. The officials are the ones on the ice. They're in the fog of war. They know what's going on. They can see the play developing in front of them. If they think, you know, they have whistles for a reason. If they think that it's that this is a penalty or this is a foul or this is a violation, make the call immediately. Otherwise, it should have counted as a goal.
But the argument that the owners and the general managers make, and they say, well, hockey's a fast game, and they're just human, right? And they're going to miss things. And, yeah. and that's why video review exists in all pro sports, right?
Yeah.
So I agree
but
with
that's
what you're
like
saying.
A safe, but as he missings is like, I guess, the offside to an extent.
Basically, what yeah, we're saying, though,
something
is
where it's cut and dry. If the puck crosses the goal line, it's generally cut and dry. When
right.
If you're
right.
onside or you're offside, it's cut and dry. Yeah. If it's a high stick, pretty close
it's
to
not
being
reviewable, but
yeah, cut and dry.
That's the point. You have it kind of cut and dry.
Yeah, when this is
nice play on words there, Drew. Yeah. On a high stick, cut and dry there. But that's at least okay. That's unreviewable.
Well, that's the issue, right, Rich?
No,
people have a short
make any
people
sense.
Have a short memory, but goalie interference didn't used to be reviewable.
Well, you know,
it's only been a short time. Well, what has it been, a year, 2 years since goalie interference was reviewable?
No, just
right?
This year. This year.
Yeah, so been
1 reviewable.
Year. So, I mean,
not
we're,
even
we're still
25
in,
games or something.
So the question then becomes, well, should goalie interference be reviewable? And I would probably say no.
I would agree, no. The refs are watching the game. You know,
this all happened. One of the reasons this happened is because of the, what was it, last year, the Detroit game where so Holpe fell in his own net, and the puck was shot into an empty net, and then they called it no goal because they thought it was goalie interference.
Yeah.
It's like these big plays cause these problems, right? I mean, you could even argue, Drew, if offside, if the puck comes in offside, and the puck's in the zone for
3 minutes.
3 minutes,
yeah.
They could challenge that it was offside, and that shouldn't have happened.
Of course, because that's the rule. I mean, you can challenge on
but
offside.
But yet the purpose of that rule was really to get away with the Matt Duchene goal against Nashville a couple years ago,
sure.
Where the puck, they thought possession was brought back into the zone. Duchene picked it up 40 steps offside and scored on a breakaway. So you think about these snapshots of things that they're trying to capture,
mm-hmm.
but they're really capturing far more.
I don't think offside should be reviewable either, Richie. I think the only thing that should be reviewable is whether a puck has crossed the line.
I agree with you, Ezzy. None of these plays have been reviewable for the last 100 and some odd years or however long the league's been in existence, and I think the league's been okay without it. And if
I think the thing is, Drew, is the intention of the rule is to not have a goal be a blatant goal interference that means so much in the Stanley Cup final.
Sure.
The problem is they may have created a situation where a goal like that goes the other way and creates the same uproar in the Stanley Cup final.
And that's part of the problem, absolutely. Let's head to break. When we come back, Mike Colligan is going to join us to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN 1290.
Performance gas or diesel fuel and clean your windshield. And for a limited time, buy a box of Toffifee for only $1.99 and get a coupon for a box of Old Dutch chips for just 99 cents while supplies last. Treat yourself to Co-op's full service today at participating locations. Let us serve you.
You're listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It's 6:30 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark. In the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. You can also see his work at Forbes Sports Money. Mike, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good to talk to you again, guys.
Mike obviously brought you on to talk about the Penguins. Fourth place in the Metropolitan Division, 14-8-2, 30 points so far this year. Yet, you know, despite having a pretty decent record, probably what, you know, most fans would have hoped for in Pittsburgh, or not too upset, it seems like there's all sorts of controversy and just a lack of cohesion flowing around this team. Is that a fair assessment so far?
Yeah, you know, it's really been, I think, your assessment is exactly what a lot of people are feeling, and that's not only in Pittsburgh, but nationally and in Canada. I think everyone has this feeling around the Penguins, around, you know, it's 14-8-2. I think that, to me, I think it's impressive given my expectations on the season. I think they're doing well to stay right up there in a very tough metropolitan division. But at the same time, it just doesn't feel right. The games that you watch them play, it just doesn't feel like this is a Stanley Cup contender. And whether it's controversy on and off the ice or just a team that really isn't clicking, I think, at this point, as far as what we're used to seeing from the Pittsburgh Penguins in the past. I mean, how many of those teams in the past under Dan Bylsma were high-scoring teams, electric, always had, you know, high-end talent? And then you throw a Phil Kessel onto the lineup this summer, and I think everyone had expectations this would be the team scoring like the Washington Capitals of 5, 6, and 7 years ago, but certainly hasn't been the case. A big focus on defensive play this year and really a five-man defensive effort that I think is keeping the Penguins at least in these games. And then when you have a really all-star goalie in Marc-Andre Fleury as far as this season goes, I think that's been a good formula to get them to that 14-8-2 record so far.
Mike, you just mentioned that the Penguins are in fourth in the Metropolitan Division. They're playing pretty well. Crosby's starting to play a lot better. Malkin seems to be getting highlight reel goals every night. Marc-Andre Fleury's playing well. You know, their defense is starting to play a little bit better than it was a few weeks back, but yet they don't look like a playoff contender right now. So in your mind, what's the biggest problem with the Pittsburgh Penguins right now? Is it coaching? Is it style of play? Is it personnel? Is it lack of leadership? Why isn't it that anybody thinks that they're a legitimate playoff threat right now?
Well, I'll start with a few of those items. First, the coaching, I think, is always very tough to assess. You know, we sit here and we say, oh, this is a great coach or that's not a great coach. And I mean, you guys played sports. Growing up, you know that a coach, what you see is probably 5% of really what's going on there. You don't know what the conversations are. You don't know what the dynamics are with him and the players in the locker room. So many of these unknowns that make it tough to say a coach is great or not. So at this point, I really don't have a strong opinion on Mike Johnston in his second year as a rookie head coach coming out of junior hockey. But when I look at this team, I think it really starts in the defensive end. And while we talked about the Penguins really focusing on playing a five-man defensive effort, being strong in their own end, I think that's because they realize they don't have a ton of depth on defense. They've lost so many players, mostly to free agency over the last 2 years on that back end, that they've tried to work some of their youngsters in. A lot of them aren't stepping up to the plate and contributing like they expected. And I think that's causing a guy like Sidney Crosby to have to play a lot of minutes inside his own end, behind his own net, not in the offensive end, and that's why the points aren't coming. Now, we're seeing Evgeny Malkin kind of doing both on both ends of the ice, and I think that's what makes his season so far, and at least the last few weeks, so impressive. But this is a team that's saying, hey, we don't have a lot of depth back there. We've got to really start in our own end and then work our way out. I think that's going to be their biggest Achilles heel, because that's not something you can fix overnight. You can't just go out and find two top four defensemen, which I think is what they really need at this point.
Maybe that they've needed that for some time, Mike. And you mentioned Sidney Crosby. What is going on with Sidney Crosby in terms of his relationship with Mario Lemieux and ownership there?
Yeah, tough question. You know, again, another one that unless you're really there, I think there's only two people, Mario and Sidney Crosby, that could tell you what that dynamic is truly like. But something is not 100% going well for Crosby. And I don't know if that's on the ice. I don't know if that's the head coach and being unhappy with what they've done as far as building a roster and some of these holes that we've just talked about that are perceived and probably don't make them a strong Stanley Cup contender at this point, or something totally different. Crosby just does not look himself. And I know there's been a lot of talk about, hey, he's getting up there in age. He's approaching 30 years old. I mean, that's fine. He's not going to get any better, but he's not going to fall off that quickly either. This is a guy that missed significant time with those concussions. And so he's got legs left. He's got some good hockey in him. He just doesn't look engaged for whatever reason. And I think that's a big problem. You know, that trickles down the team when your captain and the face of the franchise, the face of the NHL, as a matter of fact, is not engaged and not playing disciplined. That's the habits that then are instilled by all the players and the rest of the team. And I think discipline's been a problem for the Penguins the last few years. It starts with those star players. When those guys aren't on their games, you can see how quickly that can unravel. And so many teams have struggled with the same problem. You've got to have the top players bought in, and then it goes from there as far as a successful franchise goes.
You know, you mentioned the Crosby and his struggles, and I watched the game. Obviously, Mike, you're watching them a lot more closely than I am, but I watched the game against Columbus, and you know, I want to talk to you about the Brandon Dubinsky cross-check in a second, but he did seem, after getting hit and then eventually came back, he was engaged or angry and seemed to play with a little bit more passion than even earlier in the game. But I want to ask you about the team as a whole. I know they're not the toughest team, and certainly they have a lot more skill than probably their goals for would indicate, but are you surprised that the team didn't maybe stick up for Crosby more than they did after that play?
I am. You know, it really took Evgeny Malkin later fighting Jack Johnson to be the only guy, and that's not what you want. You know that. You don't want your star player sticking up for your star player in that situation. But when you look at the roster, I don't know who it is. Patrick Hornquist is the guy that I think takes on most of the battles from a Penguins perspective every night. He's not putting the points in this year, and he's definitely not clicking with Sidney Crosby, and that's why they've been shaking up their lines over the last few weeks. But Hornquist is really the one tough guy that they have that will go through a wall in order to fight those battles. But when you think of the Penguins the last few years, 2 years ago, they got a new GM, new head coach, and said, hey, we want to have grit and character. Those were the two words they kept putting out there. They went out and got guys like Steve Downey and really tried to toughen up the roster. Now, when they got in the playoffs last year, I think they realized, hey, we just got rid of a lot of speed and skill, and so have now swung back the other direction to what we originally saw a few years ago under Dan Bylsma, to really approaching smaller, faster guys, but guys that can't stick up for Crosby when you have those situations. And you know, there's division teams, whether it's the Flyers, whether it's now Columbus, the New York Rangers, those are teams that are going to take advantage of that and take liberties on the Penguins star players. I'm not sure who's going to fight those battles when you get into some of this division hockey over the next few months.
Our guest on NHL This Week is Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Hockey News. Also, you can see his work for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, you know, all that being said, you look at the roster and, you know, you look at the big names that jump off the page, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Fleury, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is it possible? Is there a leadership void in this dressing room, though? Is there just a problem where nobody wants to sort of, there's so many good players and with the egos that accompany them, that maybe nobody wants to sort of grab that leadership mantra and be the voice of reason in that dressing room?
Well, you know what's interesting about Crosby, and the other thing with him is just a very unique personality, a guy that is a bit obsessive with the way he prepares for the games and the way he approaches practices. And, I mean, you'll see line mates that just roll their eyes after a while because he's just every shift in their face saying, hey, I need you here, I need you here, I need you to go to here. That's not the way a lot of players play. That's not the way a lot of players think the game. But I think that can get tiresome for teammates at times. And I'm not saying that his team has turned against him or anything. But what worked for the Penguins when they won the Stanley Cup in 2009 is they brought in Bill Guerin. And Guerin was a guy that was willing to get in Crosby's face and say, hey, kid, sit down, shut up. I've been there before. I've won a Stanley Cup. I'll tell you how it's done. And that didn't go over well. Crosby and Guerin did not get along. I mean, it's become, I think, a story that they were best friends, and that was the key to the season. But there were a lot of fireworks there. But I think that dynamic was actually a very positive one, in that it put Crosby in his place a bit. And I don't know how you do that. Maybe Crosby at this age is just really the guy that's got to mature and come around as a leader himself in his own right, maybe like a Jonathan Toews does in Chicago. But that was a dynamic that worked, at least in that point in the franchise, when you brought in Guerin, a guy that was willing and able to just get in Crosby's face and really stand up to him. And at this point, with Crosby's position, I don't know that anyone will, and certainly a head coach in Mike Johnston just has no leverage. I think if you brought in a Mike Babcock in a coach with a big reputation, that could have been an interesting dynamic. But the way that they went with the rookie head coach, you know that there's no head coach like that that's going to be able to stand up and tell Crosby what to do.
I agree with you, Meg. I think that's a good point. You know, you're talking about leadership and you need to respect the authority above you, so that's coach and GM. And if you watch a dynamic between Johnson, maybe some of his players, I don't want to be too critical of him, but Johnston, although I have been on the show, Johnston and Crosby, when he's even pointing out something on the ice, Crosby sometimes just looks forward and listens to him, quote unquote, but there's no engaging. And even last night, Mike Babcock comes through town here. He's coaching. The Leafs are looking at him in the eye and watching him, and you just don't see that on the Pittsburgh bench.
Absolutely. Todd McClellan in Edmonton. I mean, the other night calling out Jordan Eberle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, mm-hmm. and again, two younger guys that I think he can afford to get away with those criticisms, knowing that he's working for the long term. But there's no way Mike Johnson would come out and do the same with his star players, at least if he's trying to hold a job for the next 2 years. But I think it comes down to then how do you manage Crosby and what do they do? And one thing they also try to do is bring in an assistant coach in Rick Tocchet to kind of be that bulldog, the bad cop to the good cop of Mike Johnson. And it hasn't really gone over well. There's been a lot of discussion around the power play that Tocchet was heading up, at least for a time, that Tocchet had ideas that weren't being instituted by these players. And again, you've got all that star power. They think they know what they're doing, and the numbers have shown they don't at this point. And so I don't know where that dynamic stands right now, but a power play that's got that much firepower, that much talent, and is sitting around 23rd or 24th mm-hmm. in the league, that just doesn't add up. That's not how it should be, and it should be a team that should be living off of their power play, not having that being their Achilles heel so far.
Mike, is there any indication that the pending sale of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I know we talked to you about it last time we had you on, we haven't talked to you about it in the last few months, but is there any indication that that potential sale is having any impact on Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin, their play on the ice, and the team as a whole?
I think it has to. You know, anytime you have that, it's like, getting a new boss at work or your boss gets fired and you don't know who's coming in after that. And it could be good, it could be bad, but that uncertainty is what can make people a little bit nervous. And whether that's Crosby and Malkin, who signed long-term contracts with the Penguins and took a discount and really did all they could to set this team up for success, and to have that not work out, and now you have ownership that's walking out the door and potentially an owner that isn't willing to spend at the salary cap or isn't interested in creating a top-tier cup contender year in and year out, that's got to be nerve-wracking for those guys. And I think it happens to the whole team. And what's happened now is you've got a group in there, whether it's Jim Rutherford at his age, a head coach in Mike Johnston, the ownership, who will be there 3 years from now? That's got to be scary if you're a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, because they're making decisions at this point that I think are really just doubling down on this short-term plan. Every year it's more draft picks gone, more prospects gone for a team that, again, I don't think they were one Phil Kessel away from winning a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. That would have been the better move, was to rebuild, reload on the fly like we've seen some of these franchises like Chicago do. Instead, they just doubled down on what I think was a broken roster, and that gets scary if this team doesn't win over the next year or two here.
Final question, Mike, and the game really is funny. You know, a couple of years ago, we're talking about the high-flying Pittsburgh Penguins that can't get any goaltending in the playoffs, and what's the story with Marc-Andre Fleury? Fast forward a couple of years, the forwards are kind of letting the team down. They can't score, and Marc-Andre Fleury is the rock kind of carrying the squad a little bit. I know the style of play helps too, but would you say that's a fair assessment? And if that is, why is that the case?
Well, I think we're seeing a star struggle across the league for the most part. You know, last year in the playoffs and early on, there was a list of 12 guys that I think I kind of counted up about 2,000 career goals, and none of them had scored about 4 or 5 games into the playoff series that they were involved in. So we're seeing stars across the league really being shut down. Last year, the leading scorer only at 87 points. But I think this is a team that right now, we've seen the stars struggle all the way back to that series against the Boston Bruins in the Eastern Conference Finals about 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. They were completely shut down. And at this point, it's Marc-Andre Fleury that's keeping that team afloat. It's amazing to see how he's progressed and really changed his style. Become a much more compact goalie, not relying on his athleticism for every single save. He still has that ability to slide off the crease and make the highlight reel save, but he doesn't do it every single time. And I think that really the changes that he's made have made him, I think, consistent and also set him up to be a pretty good goaltender for the next 2 years here. He's adapted, and I think that's a great sign for the Penguins from the goaltending standpoint.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the hockeywriters.com. You can also see his work for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, always appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Always fun. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Mike. Mike's appearance on NHL This Week brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. When we come back, we discuss John Scott, All-Star? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Thursday night. Is that possible?
It's a quick show, Drew.
Boy, it's a quick show.
3 hours went by quick.
Oh, yeah, right. No. Not quite 3 hours. A bit of an abbreviated broadcast for you this Thursday evening as we get you set for NFL football here on the station. The Packers and the Lions in an NFC North battle with some playoff significance. The Lions,
the Packers need this one.
The Packers do need
this one. They've already lost to the Lions once this year.
They have. That's very true. And if you're a Vikings fan, you certainly want to see the Lions continue with their good streak of play as of late, because the Vikings, of course, in a battle with the Packers for first place in the NFC North.
And tough matchup against Seattle this weekend.
Yes, exactly. But good victory for the Vikings on the road in Atlanta last week, and then the Packers losing at home to the Bears. So you never know. With Jim Bob Cooter, the Lions offensive coordinator, they've looked like a different team so far this year. Speaking of Jim Bob Cooter, or a guy with a name that would, you know, it wouldn't be surprised if John Scott's real name was Jim Bob Cooter, would you?
I wouldn't.
No, it sort of fit. But anyways, John Scott, all-star representative for the Arizona Coyotes. You guys have a problem with this? I don't know if you've noticed it, but
of course,
fans or whomever, with the beauty of online fan voting, fan-driven voting, is that John Scott is leading, I believe, from the Pacific Division representative in votes for the All-Star game upcoming in Nashville.
He is leading, and we should also mention Jaromir Jagr doesn't seem to want to go to the All-Star game either. He said today on Twitter that he's too old for the All-Star game, which I thought was hilarious, because I was thinking to myself, Jaromir, you're not too old right now. You're one of the best players on the Panthers So, no, I mean, I have absolutely no problem with it. I think it's great. It's hilarious. And John Scott came out today and said it's pretty ridiculous that, you know, I'm going to be a nominee. But nobody should be.
But he said he'd go.
He's going to go, and the NHL wants him to go. But this is the issue, Drew. And I don't know why anybody's surprised. If you remember last year, Zemgus Girgensons got in on the Buffalo Sabres, largely in part due to the votes that he was getting in Latvia. And then obviously, you know, people in Buffalo. And by the way, Girgensons is a good player.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from Zemgus Girgensons.
Was it a first or a second round pick of the Sabres?
I don't remember which one.
I don't know if he was a first rounder, but he was definitely, if he wasn't a first rounder, he was maybe a second or third rounder not too long ago. He's still a young player. I think he's only 22 years old. But the point is, Girgensons isn't a top.
First rounder in 2012. Thank you very much.
He is a good player, but he's not a top player. You're not going to have anybody say Zemgus Girgensons is a top 20 or top 50 even forward in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Good two-way forward. But the point is, if you let fans vote the players in, they can vote for any of the players.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a democratic thing here, and the fans.
If you have teams that employ John Scott.
Well, exactly, right? I mean,
then John Scott could become an all-star.
I mean, it could be John Scott. It could be Bobby Farnham on the Devils. I mean, it could be Zach Rinaldo on Boston. I mean, I don't know why he's getting all these votes, why it's him. He's the chosen one this year, I guess.
After this all-star game fails, this format, they can just have a 3-on-3 fight and get all the enforcers that are still in the league and just punch each other.
I think it'd be better if you have John Scott lining up against Phil Kessel. He'll hack him off the draw. John Scott in 3-on-3 would also be the funniest thing ever.
Well, I mean, John, he's obviously got a good sense of humor about this, which leads me into the segue in mentioning that this hilarious segment, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
No, Drew, so I got to give Drew credit, because I didn't think he was going to be able to fit all the sponsors in an hour show. There's only four segments, and so it's impressive. Good on you, Drew. But
thank you.
You know, back to John Scott quickly here.
Yeah.
Again, I think, you know, good for him. He's going to get nominated, and it looks like he's going to play, right, barring some unforeseen circumstances. And again, if the NHL wants to change that, they're going to have to change the current format. Because, again, if you leave it up to internet fan balloting, Richie, fans are going to have fun with it and say, you know what, all it takes these days is social media to something on Twitter or Facebook. You get something going and say, you know what, let's just vote for John Scott. Let's get him in. That'll be hilarious.
If we're talking social media, maybe we can get a campaign to vote Ezzy into the All-Star game. I'd be on board for that.
John Scott's a healthy scratch tonight, by the way.
Is he really for the Coyotes? Yeah.
Well, it's funny, Rich, because he's going to be a healthy scratch at the All-Star game, too.
Yeah, yeah. At least he'd be comfortable doing that. Nashville's a good place to be if you're going to be a healthy scratch.
Well, I'm sure John Scott, I'm sure part of his, if this All-Star game was, you know, in Edmonton or, you know, some other city that may be a little less appealing, he might not be as excited to go. But to go to Smashville for a trip and he gets to, you know, rub shoulders
good
with the
John
elite
Scott.
Of the NHL.
Good for John Scott. I'm going
to
give my
good
cheer.
Good for the fans.
My cheer goes to John Scott.
We're
good not, for him.
Well, people are on Twitter and online all day, right? So they're just going to pick up something. They're bored.
Sure. Well,
that's what it is.
If people are bored and the NHL, I mean, there's nothing they can do about it. They open it up to the fans.
I don't think the NHL cares, Drew. Why?
Of course not. We're talking about it. Of course. I should mention, Saturday show, 8 a.m. on here on TSN 1290, and we have an interview with Matthew Schneider, special assistant to the executive director of the NHLPA, Donald Fehr. I conducted that interview earlier today, and it's a really interesting interview. You'll hear it in its entirety on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 8 a.m., getting you set for the Jets and the Capitals.
We got to get out here, but IllegalCurve.com has all your skills comp information.
There's a live blog on IllegalCurve.com. Dave Minuk, of course, the hardest working man in the Winnipeg sports business, is at the arena keeping you abreast on everything to do with the skills competition. That's it for the abbreviated show this Thursday night. Big thanks to Mike Colligan for joining us to talk about the Penguins. In case you missed it, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, and Keener Jerseys. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and skills competition news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Alex, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 8 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and stay tuned for NFL football here on TSN 1290.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show every Saturday and join Drew, Richard, and Ezra for NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve next week on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.